have with us today a fellow named Jim Molnar. Jim Molnar is a longtime NBG supporter from White Bear Lake. Is it Minnesota, Jim?
Yes, it is.
Great. And he comes to Minnesota by way of Just Two Bicycles, which we'll talk about in a moment. But I think what needs to be known is many of the listeners here are familiar with the name Jim Molnar. He's rightfully been alluded to by me as the Mighty Jim, and soon you'll see why that indeed is the case. Jim, you're known as the inventor of the smart cart. When we say inventor of the smart cart, a lot of people have good ideas. I think it's more a function of just you were the guy that was really able to kind of make the sale. Would that be more correct determination of that description of your yourself as you relate to smart cart?
Well, I don't know about making the sale. I was able to make it work. Initially, somebody else had come up with the idea, and he had me manufacture some items for him. And I thought it was a very good idea, and I liked the concept and everything else. But unfortunately, the promoter went bankrupt. And at the time that happened, they owed me about $100,000.
Oh my God!
And I had to make a hard choice: either buy out their bankruptcy, or lose the $100,000. And at the time, I thought, well, I'm so close to the bottom. Why not go for it? If I fall, I'm not falling too far. It took me about 10 years, though, to really establish the smart cart system, and I'm the one that really came up with the name smart cart for the carts, which are really a device to help people enjoy their travel when they, when they're in airports.
So essentially, it's a shopping cart for. Tell us what the people that don't do a lot of air travel. What exactly is the smart cart?
Well, a baggage cart is something that you can, when you come into the airport, you've got more bags than you can handle. You can easily go to a machine, rent it at the time was $1. And then use it any place around the airport. And then when you finish with it, you can return it to the unit or one of the units around the airport, and there are numerous ones. And then you get a 25-cent refund. And it worked out very well because the carts were always maintained. They're always you rarely, if ever, came across a cart that had a flat wheel or a broken caster or something like this. So. But by 1993, when I sold it, we had about 600 employees spread out in almost every state in the union, 5 countries, several Caribbean islands, and we were owners of the baggage carts, all the lockers in the airports, train stations, and bus terminals in the United States.
Wow.
At the time, we also owned and operated about 100 shopping centers where we rented out our carts, and they were modified a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. And I will say it was a fun and exciting business. And one of the reasons, I think, and it ties in with what you're doing with NBG, is that we were helping people enjoy their travel all over the world. And even to this day, whenever I get introduced someplace and I meet somebody new and they say, what did you previously do, and I mentioned the smart cart, and they always said, oh, I've used them, I love them all over, and it makes me feel very good that you were able to do something to help mankind. And so I'm hoping that our connection here with the National Bicycle Greenway, that years from now I'll be able to get the same kind of response, and you will too.
Great. Jim, when you say 25 cents, how much does it cost to rent a smart cart now?
Well, now it's $3 in most airports.
Oh, my God.
And it's still a 25-cent reward. But at the time, we introduced a few other we thought were kind of clever ideas because the quarter became less and less of incentive. So what we did is we told the public that if they put the 25 cents back into a slot next to the one that they got the quarterback, we would give that to charity. And it was amazing how big that item became I'm not sure if they still do that in a lot of airports, but I know that in St. Paul, the police chief there, he thought nobody's going to put that cart back in there and give the quarter to charity. But on our first collection, we collected $1,500 in a month.
Oh, wow.
Maybe it was, I think it was about a month. And the police chief almost fell off his chair because that meant that 6,000 quarters had been put into those machines by somebody who said, yes, give it to the Salvation Army or give it to the Red Cross or something. And we did vary that around the country.
Wow.
But it was a clever way to make the value of the quarter last longer.
That's great. I guess what I want to ask next is, how did you transition from that to bicycles?
Well, I've always been, I really describe myself as a product development person. And so when I see things that I use or do, I always figure out there's got to be an easier way. And so one year, even before I sold SmartCard, my sister Alice asked me to, she said, you want to go for a bike ride? And I said, of course, Alice, let's go. And thinking that she meant bike around the lake someplace in St. Paul or in the area. And then on her second breath, she said, we're going to bike across Minnesota. And I said, whoa, that's a little further than I thought. But I said, oh, I'll do that, because it was, again, for a good cause. It was for multiple sclerosis. It's, in Minnesota, it's called the Tram Ride, the ride across Minnesota, and all the funds, MS. So we did that, but on the ride, she kept saying, Jim, you're going too fast. Jim, don't lose me. Jim, talk to me. And one day I saw this single recumbent go by, and I thought, well, I'm an engineer. I'll just take two of those and nail them together somehow or another, attach them some way, and then she'll be right next to me, and I won't be able to lose her, and she'll be able to talk to me, and I can show her how to shift. And that was where the idea became. So I built one for the following year and rode it across Minnesota. And during the ride, various people, because it was, would say, wow, boy, if I had one like that, my wife could ride with me or my husband could ride with me, because they had MS. And that was really the beginning of Just Two Bikes. And I will say that the term Just Two Bikes really has a personal connection, because the letters John, JTB really stand for my three children, John, Todd, F. So it's always been a close connection. But over the years, as we developed the product, it did take a good number of years to refine it. But during those years, again, we had families who had children who had either a mental or physical disability where they could not ride a bike. And those children, I could spend the next hour talking about some of the experiences. And one of the most significant areas was up in Seattle with a group called Ski for All. It's a voluntary group where they take young children and adults who can't ride a bike or ski or something, and they use our equipment to take these children and adults for rides. And it's so rewarding. I can't tell you how good it makes you feel to be able to help again the public and mankind enjoy life just a little bit compared to what we take for granted when we hop on our...
Well, a couple questions about that, Jim. When you were riding with your sister, were you riding on a recumbent at the time before you got...
I was an upright bike. I had not thought about a recumbent, except the incentive was huge, because I can tell you that that first time across Minnesota, I never realized how painful those conventional seats can be. I made it, okay.
Okay.
And I have to throw in a little of, one day after the second or third day, I was in such agony with my rear end, I was standing up, and And I thought, oh, I'm not going to make this. This is just too hard. And then this older man, I mean, he had to be 20 years older than I was. He is passing me up, going up to this hill, and he says, "Hey, Sonny, how you doing?" You know, and it was so humbling to see him whip up the hill, sitting down, and there I am in agony standing up. I thought, I'm not going to let this give up. So he was really my incentive, and to this day, he and I are friends, and we've had great times on some of those rides together.
He still rides?
Oh yes, he still
Wow.
rides, and he just recently wants to buy one of my recumbent trikes
Okay,
because
let
he
me
had a little
interrupt.
accident with his recumbent, and he said maybe it's time for me to ride a trike.
Okay,
So.
I want to interject something right here. He must be, for those that have not gotten to this point in the interview yet, those of you don't know, Jim is 69 this year. Is that correct, Jim?
Right.
69 years old. So if he's got someone calling him Sonny, that fellow's got to be, you said, 20 years older than you?
Well, maybe he wasn't 20. Maybe he's 10 years old. I know
Okay.
that right now he's got to be pushing 80 easily. And so.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty amazing. So in addition to the side by side just two recumbent, and when he talks about a recumbent or a tandem, it's not a traditional inline tandem. It's I hope that our listeners got that that's you sit next to each other. How much wider is that bike going to be than is it almost like a quadricycle then?
Well, the difference between our bike design and most other wider bikes is while the handles are 4 feet wide, in truth, is what happens, the wheels, the center of the riders, is only 26 inches apart, so that the wheels are only 26 inches wide, so that when you're riding along a trail or the edge of a road or something, you can be riding very close to the edge of the trail and you take up less space. And I know we get asked that question a lot. They said, oh, it looks wide, but reality is that it's not any wider than a conventional bike when you're riding on a trail, because part of the bike hangs the side of the trail. So the let's say the right-hand side of the bike or the rider, they're you know, practically half of their body can hang over the side of the trail. You just have to watch out for some of the trees that might be there or a mailbox along a road or
I
something.
see.
But it's not a problem. I've ridden it all over, and whenever somebody says, oh, our trails are too narrow, I generally go there and ride the trail to prove to myself that no, it's not too narrow, it's not too wide, and we have it ridden in all kinds of conditions.
So Jim, it sounds to me like the bike is kind of it errs toward the right side of the road, in other words.
Right, yes.
Okay. And also you can take those apart, right?
Right,
So
you
you can
can't
ride
take them
solo?
apart. They're two separate singles.
I see. So
And
in a
much easier than it was from the first ones, but they've always been built that way.
Huh.
Reality of it is that most people who buy these bikes never do that. I would say 1 out of 100 takes them apart because they're just too convenient to keep them together. I know just the other night I rode out to dinner with a friend of mine and had dinner and rode down the street, up on the sidewalk, no problems at all. And it was fun rather than in your car. And yet, be talking and waving to people. You can stop without unclipping. So the idea of having 4 wheels is such a huge advantage for most people that ride bikes. I mean,
What is the manufacturer's suggested retail on the on your Just Two?
it's very close today to $5,000 to
Okay.
a level bike and with a few little things on it. Comes with all the standard safety flags, and it does have a little bag in the back so you can go to the grocery store and pick up a few things or the hardware store. And it's the bag is smaller today than it used to be, and that's because in the past, at various times, I would see a child sitting in that bag. And it's only held on with Velcro. Of course, it's very sturdy, and the Velcro does an excellent job, but I just felt for safety reason that we had made the bag way too big, and it just gave these kids, when they did ride it, a chance to say to their friends, "Hey, just hop in the bag, we'll give you a ride."
Wow. Now that's the flagship of the Just Two. You also make a folding trike that fits in a suitcase, and you've ridden across the nation. What can you tell us about that bike?
That's a more in our double bikes, because somebody didn't want to ride it separately, and they were by themselves, they didn't have a partner, and so that's how that bike came into being. And so I shopped around and discovered somebody in Wisconsin, actually a professor over there, had come up with the concept. And when I called him about buying one and seeing if it would fit into our line, he told me, "Well, I don't manufacture them anymore. I only did one all run." And he said, "I discovered it wasn't for me." And so I said, "Oh, it's too bad." I said, "I really wanted to buy one." And added to another, I bought out his company. It was called the
Tricumbent.
Raven at the
Tricum
time.
Tricumbent.
Tricumbent, right.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
still have that name registered, and there is some information under tricumbent.com, but it's minimal right now. So I took it and discovered why he was having these problems, because it was built to fit an individual person. You couldn't adjust the seat and things like this. So I redesigned it into a much more flexible bike. And at the time, I looked at other bikes being manufactured around the country, and they were doing the similar things where they were saying packing into a suitcase. And so I thought, well, this product would fit that category very well. So I've done that. I've redesigned it, and I designed a suitcase that I could easily pack the bike into. It takes about 5 minutes to disassemble the bike, but the one thing about when I say disassemble, it doesn't mean you have to connect any derailleurs, you connect no brakes, and so everything stays in adjustment. So when you're taking things apart, you're taking a mechanical connection apart and putting it into a suitcase. And then when you get there, you reverse the process. You assemble the bike. Again, you don't have to make any adjustments on anything. Just get it assembled correctly, and then fold up the suitcase. It fits into the rear pannier, and then you can put a clothing bag, which is designed to fit on top of the suitcase, and off you ride.
Okay, now
And I.
Jim, let me interrupt for a second here. Now you said that there are no gears to worry about. That's not as if to say that this is a low performance machine. You've gone over the Rockies with it. You've been across the Appalachians, the Sierras. How many gears does the bike have?
This one, you can have a variety of them. At various times, I've had a combination 28, sometimes 27. It's usually in that range. We do have a 13-speed internal that's sold in Europe that we used as our front-wheel drive, and then we had a 2-speed. And again, that was a German-made product,
The slumped.
and then we use standard, 9x3 or 9x2 combinations. So there's always more than enough gear. We try to not over-gear it, because a lot of people just ride it on in a smaller environment, and they don't need 27 or 28 gears.
Okay, now
So
you
we try
try.
to fit to the needs of the person.
Jim, you travel a lot. And every time I talk to you, you're always on the go. Do you always take a bike with you?
Almost always. I try to always have, in fact, I'm just looking at my van right now, and already, and because I am getting older and I haven't ridden my two-wheel recumbent recently, When I come out to California, I'll have both a two-wheel recumbent and a trike with me, just so I have a little variety
Okay,
when
now,
I'm riding.
okay, now when you rode that trike up the CNO, tell us a little bit about what that ride was like on the trike. That wasn't a good testing ground for that type of bike, I don't think, with the ruts
Well,
and the trails, in the rain.
It was interesting because at the time, I hadn't done enough research on what we were going to be riding on. And it worked fine. I mean, I would have selected, had I known in advance we were going to be on the CNO trail, I would have selected a little heavier duty tires than I had. I had a more of a touring tire at the time. And I did have, you know, maybe a half a dozen flats over the course of that ride. But it was very interesting because the trail was, it was a, you know, it was a two-wheel, a track, like a car track. And unfortunately, the width of my bike was just so that I could have either my front wheel and one rear wheel in a track, but the third wheel had to be in the grass on one side or the other. So, but it, like I said, it worked out fine. And halfway through that CNO trail, I did change the rear wheel tires to a heavier duty tire.
Okay, and you also did the polka in the rain.
Pardon me? Oh yeah. Well, we came across this section of road that was really, they had said was closed, and we looked and we said, or this was a trail, and we said, well, we're gonna work our way through that. We're not gonna let a little detour throw us off track too far. So we went through the trail, and they were really building, you know, a new part of a new trail. And lo and behold, in the middle of a rainstorm, we came across this brand new building. It looked like it had never been used, and it was just for bikers to be able to go inside and, you know, just be out of the rain. And so we decided to stop there and rest for a few minutes. And we were all cold. There were three of us, two women and myself, and I feel badly that I can't name them right now. But we were going to have a cup of coffee, and then we said, no, it's too much hassle. And so I said, well, I'll teach you how to polka, so warm us up. And again, you know, we would hum or sing the songs, and I taught both of the ladies to do a polka, and surprisingly did warm us up. We had our little polka lesson. We opened the door, and we're going to brave the cold weather again and rain, and lo and behold, my bike had a flat tire. So the girls said, well, I guess we're going to have the coffee after all. And so they made coffee while I changed my flat tire. And then a short time later, we were on our way, and it worked out very well.
Well, Jim, this is your 69th year, actually entering your 70th year, I would think, and you're going to ride with us across the United States in 2007 when we go from Boston to Washington, D.C. to San Francisco. And I think that a lot of people out there want to know what your secret is. Where does longevity come from? Where is your fire? What have you done that what's your secret? How come you're just so all over it?
Well, I will say that I'm a Rotarian, and as I watch my fellow Rotarians, both men and women, gaining weight, I had said to myself, okay, I'm never going to weigh over 200 pounds. And so during these rides on the double, various times some of the other people would say, well, you know, that's for old people, and you know, they're slower and everything else. Well, I said, that's not true. I said, they can be very fast. So at the time, I had a young lady working for me who happened to be a triathlete. Her name was Julie Olson. And at one time, she was listed as the fastest woman in the U.S. I do have a picture of her, you know, race triathlon that she did in Hawaii. She did the Ironman, and she was like second place 3 years in a row, I think. But anyway, So what I did is I built two fast single recumbents for Julie and I, and we did the tram ride 1 year. And of course, Julie was kind of a ringer because these pace lines, because recumbents were just coming into the norm at the time, and these pace lines didn't want to have a recumbent in their pace line. So they would always want to, they would never let us join in them. But they could never lose us in a ride. They would say, you know, how can these guys keep up with this? We're on this pace line. And then to add insult to injury, when they couldn't keep going, they'd always put their fastest rider in the front. And we would wear them up, and then we would pass them up. And we knew we had them when they would say, who are you? Where'd you come from? You know. And so after that ride, I decided that I should do a longer ride. And that's when I rode my first time across the U.S. And I joined a group of 50 from L.A. to Orlando, from Disneyland to Disney World, a 2,800-mile ride or somewhere around 3,200-mile ride, I think it was, with 50 people. 30 of them were men and 20 were women. And I made some of the best friends in my life on that ride. But it made me realize that biking was such an important part of maintaining your health. And I know that at the first few weeks, these people, after riding 80 to 100 miles, would say, Tim, we're going to a movie tonight. You want to join us? Or we're going to the museum, or we're going here. And you only had one chance to say yes, because if you said no, it's all right, we'll see you tomorrow. And they would be off doing something after their long rides. And I thought, this has got to be really good for people. So I built that biking into my lifestyle. And I will say that today I still am under that 200-pound level. And I just, when I gain a few pounds, I go for a longer bike ride.
And you're a big guy. How tall are you, Jim?
I'm 6'3".
6'3", and he's not, he's a big strapping boy, if you will, at 6'3". Jim, on this coming back, if you will, to the this business of riding a bike, you do more than that. You're real careful about, you don't smoke, you don't drink.
I do drink a little bit.
Okay, maybe a beer here and there.
Yeah.
And any special things you do with food?
With food?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not really a chef, but I do like food, and I have participated in preparing food at various times, and I watch what I eat. The other things that I do that I should mention in order to keep my weight and my health is I am a dancer, I'm a skier, I'm a tele-skier, I snowshoe, I'm a hiker. And so all those activities definitely
What kind of ski, cross-country?
I do cross-country, I do downhill, and I do telemark skiing.
Telemark, what is that?
It's like a cross-country ski, except you do it downhill.
Uh-huh.
When you see a skier doing it, it looks like he's genuflecting or she's genuflecting as they're going down the hill.
Huh.
You know, you lower your knee as you're making your curve, your turn, you're carving your turn.
Mm-hmm.
You lower one knee or the other down almost to your boot, and it carves the turn. It's a fun. It's slower than downhill skiing, but you're in much more control of the ski.
Coming back to cycling, how many miles do you figure you ride a month on average?
Oh boy, that's it comes in spurts. Sometimes, like this week, I've maybe biked 50 to 75 miles this week only. Normally when I'm in Minnesota, I bike, you know, at least 25, 30 miles a day. That's just going back and forth to work.
Mm-hmm.
And, which I usually do. I usually go up to the office and bike up there and bike back. But that isn't counting if I'm if I'm going to join somebody on a weekend and go biking around to Stillwater, which would be like a 50-mile round trip.
Any idea how many miles you travel a month? Plane miles?
My vans generally wind up having 200,000 to 300,000 miles on them over a period of a few years. The one I have right now, it is a little older. It's a 2000, but it's got like 150,000 miles on it. It's slowing down here. I don't travel quite as much as I used to, but I've traveled in the last month here. I must have traveled close to 8,000 miles on my van.
Oh, my God. And that doesn't include plane trips.
No, that doesn't include plane trips. That's just my driving.
Jeez. Wow.
Sometimes it lets me take all my things with me. Maybe with the cost of gas going up, I'll be biking more often.
Good. Wow. Well, Jim, you're an inspiration. You really are. You are nonstop. I think a lot of the people, our listeners out in NBG land, are a little bit closer in understanding of now why I call you Mr. Mighty Jim Molnar. And, Jim, is there anything else you want to say?
Well, I am just hopeful that you and National Bicycle Greenway can continue to grow and to impact more and more cities and states around the country to make the bike paths a reality for our young people, because it's so satisfying when I see young people out there biking with me, and they are our future, and I hope that we can together we can help them out.
Wow. Jim, you're awesome. Well, I got to say thanks a couple billion tons for the time you've taken for us today. And thanks, Jim.
You're welcome.
All right.
My pleasure. We'll talk to you again.
Okay, guy. Thank you.
Bye.
For more information about Jim, see his web at bikeroute.com/Jim Molnar. MULLNER, Jim Molnar. Or you can see his bikes at just2bikes.com. That's just the number 2 and then bikes.com. That wraps up another edition of the National Bicycle Greenway Mountain Movers interview series. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been NBG Director and Awake Again author Martin Krieg. For more information about the NBG, go to bikeroute.com.